Don't worry about it. You'll be all right. This guy over here, he shaved. You crony.
All right.
Some sad poems, some upbeat poems, short poems, a little longer poems. Not too long today.
Okay?
Roll them into them. It's called The Gates of a Lifetime. People are talking about the corporations and stuff. I love it. I love the factories. I love them all. It's a wonderful world. You guys missed it. You know, some say it's a better place to be. I don't know. Maybe. The Gates of a Lifetime. When the factories sang for me, I heard their song. Now no one knows my work, how the hand welcomed the wrench. Became one, pull all its loose tight, the machines waiting to be loved, worked, and loved back. In the last days, walking the floors, saying goodbye, not to the men, but to the sounds, having shared their secrets of the weak being broken. Looking back, the shadows ask, who will you be without me? The truck, reluctant to start, slow through the gates. The guard doesn't know, I will not be back.
Whoa! Oh, Michael! Tom Hasbrown. Guys, ever heard this? Huh? You're a responsive, energetic, or
No!
I've never heard this poem.
No!
Christ's sake, it's been around 20 fucking years. I just put it down on paper here a couple weeks ago. But it's been around the hash browns. What do you do when it's late and lonely brushes your cheek? Listen to Tom Waits. Think about all the women you love. Hope one of them loves you back. But who knows? Sometimes it's just about how much money you get, how many drinks you can buy, and maybe around the hash browns a cup of coffee after. You got a stool? I need a stool. A stool would be nice. Yeah, a stool. I'm up since 4 o'clock this morning in California. So anyway, and maybe around a hash brown with a cup of coffee, yeah. These guys come for
me. Hold on. Where do you want it? Huh? Yeah?
See, isn't that much better?
Plenty of. Right there?
Yeah.
You're gonna get my bill.
Maybe around the hash browns, a cup of coffee after. Who knows, who cares? You need somebody to talk to, and tonight she does too. You both do. Anything else is just a morning with a stranger. Everybody trying to make a clean getaway.
How about sex with old people? Little story. Little goddamn story. Sex with old people. You know about this, Larry? Sex with old people. When you finally find the moist spot, there's a good chance somebody pees. True story. And another guy knows about it. He's prone too. All right, sad poem. A night weeping in San Francisco. At the window table, street side, the Asian girl's tongue. Pink smooths her lipstick, waits.
Her companion sips his tea, misses it. Love's wait, wish, kissed into a napkin. The busboy cleans the table, dreams left on the smudged edge of a half-full wine glass. The dishwasher doesn't care, the waiter tip, never enough. The Asian girl, smile broken, follows him past the register out the door. The chill of the night weeping holds her tighter than he ever will. All right. Where is he? Paul over here. He met a dear friend of mine, Todd Cirillo. Crazy little bastard. Drinks a lot. Anyway, this is a true story. Todd's moved back to Louisiana, New Orleans. But he used to live in my neighborhood. And he had a roommate who had a parrot. Yeah, true story. You ever heard about the parrot?
No.
Well, Todd's house was like this, you know. And Lloyd Street was up above it. So when you walked, you looked down at his roof, you know. And then the other street was real steep like that. So people would walk by. And the parrot would be in the kitchen and see him and say things. So like, bite me. People get all pissed off and figure out where the parrot was talking. So this is a true story about Todd and the parrot. Todd and the parrot. He didn't used to, but he does now. Drinks with the parrot. And the parrot, well, he started to swear. Says shit and calls people motherfuckers. He says the parrot beats him too, starts arguments, seems to win most. If he knew it was going to be like this, he would have left it the way it was and let the parrot drink alone. One last one, because we're reading in Texas. Called Texas Nights. You ready?
Yeah.
It's Lieber. Baron von Lieber. Respect the gentleman. Texas Nights. Stratocasters dripping whiskey, wine, and gin into the night. Twisted string is tight enough to make a deaf dog weep, pounding desire in the souls of sweet little church girls, and making skinny white boys think they know the blues. It's another night with Stevie Ray Vaughan, one filled with Texas floods, crossroads, and talking sweet to the big girls, the ones with the tight skirts. Tight enough to let you know that something wants out. Tight enough to let you see what temptation looks like. Tight enough to show the tops of those cinnamon-colored stockings. That's where sensual lives, at the tops of those cinnamon-colored stockings. Just above sin, right below redemption. It's there that dead rock stars and weathered Stratocasters come to life. It's there that the click of a high-heeled shoe, like an overdue transfusion, taps life into a midnight dance floor. It's there that Stevie Ray Vaughan scatters stars across a Texas sky. And it's there that a weathered Stratocaster pounds romance full of whiskey, wine, and gin. Thanks, guys.
See, I don't want to insult somebody, you know, set it down here, and then... Bill Gaynor.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Woo!
Jameson Bales, who's next?
We've got a Missourian coming up. Next.
What?
Southeast Missouri, Daniel Crocker.
Daniel Crocker was the first winner of the Gerald Lachman Award in poetry. His most recent books include Like a Fish and the one where I ruined your childhood. Good name. Daniel is an assistant professor of English at Southeast Missouri State University. Daniel Crocker.
Yeah. This poem is called He-Man, You Schmarmy Bastard. If you don't know He-Man, I'm sorry. He-Man, you schmarmy bastard. You're not fooling anyone. You drug half of us out kicking and screaming. Ram Man, Extendor, Fisto, you have to be kidding me. I see the way you and Beast Man look at each other, the glances that pass in battle. Don't you have enough going on? What with ruling Eternia and the way Man-at-Arms' mustache feels fatherly against your cheek? Who wouldn't want to see you soaked in rainwater? Me. I have a fucking skull for a head. No one wants to hang out with a kid who has a skull for a head. Let's put it this way. I didn't get invited to many parties. What choice did I have then but to be evil? The gods decided on a whim I would be your eternal foe, losing, always losing. Could it be that simple? Fuck you and that stupid cat you rolled in on. Let me into Grayskull, you sleek, shirtless barbarian. You beautiful bourgeois man. Let me into motherfucking Grayskull, you lovely, lovely bastard. I'm 43, and I just got, at 43, I got diagnosed as bipolar, and this is a poem about that. Skull, they haven't called it a complex in 40 years. My wife thinks I should... There's my beautiful wife right back there, by the way. My wife thinks I should see a psychiatrist about it and leave her the hell alone. So I do. He has a list of questions for me. He asks if I'm straight or gay. A little bit of both, I say. What? He asked, like Frank Nelson. That's a reference for you young folks. A fat wooden cross covers half a wall. A samurai sword hangs on another. He scribbles something onto a notepad. I ask if everything is okay. Yes, yes, he says. It's just that this is exciting. I've never met one before. One what, I want to know. One of you, he says. I mean the boy version. He asks about my wife, my job, my kids, but oddly enough, never about my mother. When he's done, we sit in silence, staring at each other. It would become a habit of ours. Finally, he asks if I'm depressed. No more than any other poet, I say. He doesn't find it funny. Close your eyes, he says. Breathe deep. Imagine you're in the final match of a big karate tournament. This is kind of like that. No time for jokes. For 3 years, this guy never made a metaphor that didn't have karate in it. He fancies them parables. So he says, what do you think is wrong with you? Frankly, I say, I don't think it's any of my goddamn business. I guess he tried. It couldn't have been fun for him either. He really only ever gave me one piece of advice. At night, he said, think about a lake. The moon is full. The water gently laps against the shore. The music of the frogs and crickets lull you off to sleep. He had a real way with words. Look, I don't know if he'd ever actually been camping, but I know that I fucking hate lakes. The mud, the leeches, the things that brush against you beneath the deep, filthy water. This one's called Welcome to Fantasy Island. Again, I'm sorry if you don't know Fantasy Island. This is to Mr. Rourke. The letter to Mr. Rourke. You're either God or a God in your angel suit. I saw you make life from nothing. You even fought the devil once, who, as I always suspected, looked just like Roddy McDowell.
Offer us love. Offer us redemption. I dare you. No one's fantasy is ever I ran out of weed. I'm too fat. I have cancer. My husband is a real asshole. A quick perusal of Craigslist shows that most fantasies have nothing to do with dancing with the late, great Sammy Davis Jr., finding love, or having a child, but mostly have to do with nipple clamps and bodily fluids. And you just can't give anyone their fantasy. Instead, it's a week of devastating psychological torture, only to find that our fantasies were within us all along. We've just been able to see them. I briefly entertained the idea that your island was sponsored by the Koch brothers as a way to convince poor people they never really had it as bad as they thought. But I've never seen any poor people on Fantasy Island. I only see rich people, mostly white, I assume Republicans. Then again, if you are God, why haven't any of them freaked out about your Latin heritage? Why hasn't Fox News declared Fantasy Island a war on blue-eyed Jesus? What the hell is tattoo? I need to know. By the time it's over, by the time you're done toying with us, everyone wants off this island. Even me. And I believe in you, Mr. Rourke. I do. This is called The Berryman Son. John Berryman jumped off a bridge, you know.
Yeah.
Sorry to break the news, but John Berryman committed suicide by jumping off a bridge. I'm sorry if this is the first you've heard of it. You ever worry about that guy from the Oak Ridge Boys? You know, the one with the giant beard? Certainly by now he wishes he could shave it off. One stupid decision made in his early 20s he can't escape. Because it's just not the real Oak Ridge Boys experience without that beard. Well, I worry about it, man. All that itching, the maintenance, the shampoo alone must take forever. You know, I saw them in concert once. His dead eyes still haunt me. Since then, I'll lay in bed at night and think about Berryman's final plunge off that bridge somewhere up north where the Mississippi River barely exists. Except instead of Berryman, it's the guy from the Oak Ridge Boys. His beard reaches towards the heavens like it has a soul of its own. He's singing Elvira. He doesn't even hit the water, just mud. From what I can tell, and honestly, this is all based on body language, like that guy from O'Reilly does. The other three are doing just fine. Look, in the end, I know it's hard to feel sorry for a rich, straight, white guy, but I do. Especially when I think of him laying awake in bed at night, overcome with grief, and stroking his beard, wondering what the hell he's done with his life. This one's called The Hulkster. If you don't know anything about Hulk Hogan, again, I apologize. Knees crumbled like blue cheese and my back always hurts. But when my wife left and took all the money, what could I do? I worked. I mean, I wrestled. I'm not a rocket scientist, for Christ's sake. I'm Hulk fucking Hogan. She ended up dating a guy who looks just like I did in the 80s. He's 19. That's weird, right? I never wanted so badly to be young again. The 80s were good. Ronald Reagan, Whitesnake, Molly Ringwald, the old red, white, and blue flying in every other yard. I body slammed Andre the Giant. I dropped my big leg on the Iron Sheik. It was a metaphor, brother. I was a Hulkster. Now, I have nothing. A truck full of bandanas, a daughter who looks just like her mother. It's hard. Even I can't Hulk up out of everything. Me, the original real American hero, destitute, living in a one-room apartment with a television that only picks up CNN, I lie so still. Are all of those droned daughters my daughters too? The blood and the bone of my daughters, the missing limbs of my daughters, the fathers who are gone forever, are they me? I was made to hurt people. In the end, it didn't matter who I worked for. They're all the same suits, the same greased up hair, the same fat white smile. It all runs so very wild. Don't feel sorry for me. I got my cut. And at night, I still say my prayers and eat my vitamins, all of these beautiful pills for pain.
Yeah.
All right, one more quick one. This one is called Sestina McRib. I wrote it for my wife. Sestina. Oh, I love the Sestina. And I love the McRib. Sestina McRib. When God pulled that bow of bone from Adam, he couldn't have seen this coming. Or maybe he could. They say he sees everything coming. I don't. At least not until it's too late. And now the McRib is back. $2. It's not really a rib. That's the fast one. This boneless gift used to be sloppy, out of control. Lately, its act has come together. This fistful of little problems. I don't want to sound sentimental, but Ronald, he must have wept. Howie must have wailed when the McRib was torn from his side. Lonely doesn't touch the lack of it. The missing bone is so long a part of his flesh. This, you said, sauce on your hands isn't real meat. And later, that half-eaten sandwich tempts me. It's late. You're asleep. I'm drunk. He, God, not Ronald, would deny me this. I eat anyway. Devour it. The McRib. And the bone bleached gaze of the moon doesn't make me feel guilty at all. I do not feel guilty at all. It's too late for that. And of Adam and his lost bone, I wonder if he missed it. Reached for it at night like the rib was there only to find this. This empty pillow, this car full of empty wrappers. Don't dwell on it much. Think of the McRib, even now when it's getting late. Try not to think of the way he must have felt. A sack of meat and missing bones. I saw this all coming too late. Don't let its lack of bones fool you. Everything is falling apart except for the McRib.
Thank you. Woo! Yeah. 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 Don't take this the wrong way, but how did you get on a university faculty? I meant that as a compliment. You know you ain't getting tenure. Every year the faculty has this secret, how do we get rid of this guy who's really nice, but he's crazy. Better, that's the coolest freaking university in Missouri. All right.
They let me re-culture them.
See? Something's wrong. Yeah, they hire him. Oh yeah, I've been coached. Jameson, who's next?
From Buffalo, New York. Missy Con Sarah. That's right.
You checked first. I didn't.
I did.
And you know what? I need to be doing this more. I apologize for not doing it. Everybody here is published, and we're going to have these things for sale in one capacity or another here, or exchange or whatever. Mistral Con Becerra, officially coolest name of the night. I just screwed it up.
That one's not right, yeah.
Mistral Con Becerra?
Yeah, Becerra. You got it. Becerra. It's a C, but you know.
No, it's these things are no longer working. Great. Yeah, it's a poet and fiction writer. Born and raised in Buffalo, New York by her Chilean family. She loves the city and finds nostalgia around it every corner. And her work, Mistral, frequently draws on the complex relationship between mother and daughter. She attempts to bridge the gap between what is expected of or from this relationship and how stark or truly inspired its reality can be. She also fiddles around with how this dynamic presents itself in romantic relationships. Facebook photo right now, quickly, all of you.
Oh, my photo! Sorry, guys, I'm a little bit of a mess. How are you guys doing? Good. I am so happy to be here, and I'm so excited that we were, Cringe Worthy was invited to come read, and I'm like super stoked, and I'm running on 3 hours of sleep, so let's get started. My mother is my friend, but she is still my mother. I visited Mom on Sunday so she could show me these dresses she bought for her friend's daughter's wedding. When I walked into her apartment, the upper flat of an old duplex, she motioned to a cigarette and lighter that rested on the kitchen table. It was an offer to catch up. I'm trying to quit, aren't we all? She had bought two dresses. Her favorite was a full-length purple deal. It scrunched down the middle of her back. My butt looks good, right? Totally. Later, I'm sitting in my car, looking up at her kitchen window, and I see her ashing the cigarette. I light mine and watch her sweatered arm throw her half-smoked stick into the long driveway, glad to be rid of it. I want to run naked through the rain and feel the outsides on my insides. No sun here in Buffalo, only the dense Peace Bridge smog covering my breasts and belly with their soft cloud toxicity. It's January, and I could run up and down Allen tonight in only my underwear. The neon bar lights reflecting off the rain droplets gathering on my collarbones, dripping down my plush back. I would kiss so many strangers in the night, lapping up their tears with my strawberry tongue. I wish I could make everybody's pain my own. I would dance through the street, past Hardware, past DBGB's and Brick Bar, towards Frizzy's and Town. My calloused feet would be no match for the purposefully broken glass on the sidewalk. I would bleed a river so wide that no one could cross it. Down there among the beer salmon and blood carp, I would hear the echoes of a pastel howling. Back when we sat on the top of a fire escape to watch the city burn, we tried to catch all the new ash promises in our soft, outstretched paws. We barked laughter and awe into the long, bright night. But our sweet hope turned to terror as we threw old bricks down onto the pavement. We watched them explode on the concrete 6 floors down. Their sound echoed admonishment as we became aware of an upcoming face. I knew I missed one. This is the first poem I wrote in Spanish, so this is for maybe, I think, two of you. Also, don't, like, make fun of my accent. Like, everyone else is going to be like, oh, wow, that's really good Spanish. And, like, the two of you are going to be like, oh, she sounds like a baby. La dificultad de solo vivir un momento a la vez. Adentro de este cuerpo tengo un corazón que me palpita. Mi sangre azul y viscosa me llena completamente. Recorre el circuito sin fin en vista. Ella me maldice por el veneno que me fumo día a día. Y mientras mi mente se cura, a medida que mi lucha se hace más urgente, más rápido mis pulmones se convierten en cenizas. Estoy congelada. Tienes la cabeza dura como una mula, mamá siempre me dijo. Realmente es un milagro que mi fuego y mi hielo no me hayan todavía convertido en piedra. Ahí ves, va. How much time do I have? I never know.
Two more.
All right, cool. I love reading this poem. Mama dresses. The smell of everlasting cedar filled the room every time Mama would open the door to her closet. There in the silent dark hung her powdered blue, her velvet black, her tulle skirted, her golden stitched, her lilac flow, her dresses. each came alive when shimmied over her woman's body. Sitting cross-legged on the moss-colored carpet, I remember looking up at her, comparing my not-yet chest against hers, her bulging belly against mine. In these moments, I'd lose myself to reverie, dreaming of dark nipples weeping, I prayed for a baby of my own, until the day my sister finally came. That day I learned about blood, about how loud Mama could scream. That day I saw her vulva spread open like the skirt of her red lacy, and sister's crown so much like a naked kneecap peeking out. The brown velvet couch Grammy had given us was dark with wetness. I remember in a moment between all the rest, Mama looked at me, our same eyes level with each other. She gripped my hand until I felt my knuckles crack. Her deep-throated cry a timpani, my sister's a cymbal crash. In those few hours, I learned what Mama could really do, what I could really be. Every time I read that poem, I'm like, is this mine? This one's called, "For to love another is to discover the mercy that brought harmony to the world. You are mi buche, and I am domo. The flecks of gold in your eyes are cute. Cute like the stars in the sky. Cute like the ocean. The nape of your neck is warm. Warm like sun on daffodils. Like the dry heat of New Mexico. Your hands are strong. Strong the way bird wing bones are. Your hair smells sweet the way fresh grass does. Like the soft mulch beneath does. I love you completely. I love you the way I love reading." So, I know this is the worst thing about people that come up here. I'm going to explain a little context. If you guys are interested in creation myths, Mapuche and Domo are the two first people in the Mapuche creation myths, which are the indigenous people of Chile. It's beautiful. Check it out. I'm not particularly religious, but it's all great. Alright. The difficult art of prayer. Late that night, he tried to pry my thighs open with just one hand. The heat from his hot palms soothed my bark, but my albatross remained squeezed tight. Shaking off the impression of wood, my hand made itself available to me and swept down slowly to meet his. My opposable finger planted it across my apex. My lifelines grew as they waited for him, face down on my right thigh. Then, at the end of his journey, he pushed his hand against mine, but only twice. The first time was arrogant and sturdy. His hand shoved impotently between my thighs, naively thought force would spread me out. That said, after retreating for a moment, his sideways hand crept back, his wonderful thumb and palm at mine, and softly pressed in supplication. This is the last poem I'm going to read for you guys. It's called Bored and Dangerous. Timid and oversexed, we burned so hot that the nights were pitch in comparison. We left a trail of pheromone, weed, beer belch smoke behind us. That's why we never got lost. We could always follow it home. Rachel taught me how. We were 14 and we'd walk to the pedestrian bridge to spit our friendship over the side, hoping it would ride far away on the windshield of a car. Maybe it would see the world before we had a chance to. And I asked her, "How do you find your way home?" She just pointed upwards to the west as if the sun said was her own. Thanks, guys.
Can we have like an automatic one next year?
Yeah, it's called "You Do Your Job."
Yeah. Are you reading tonight? Because I'm going to give you a serious intro, man. Jameson, who's next?
Another Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania poet, Jim Duker.
Yeah! Jim B. Groovers is an American poet born in... Okay, I'm from Kansas. Is it Waukesha or Waukesha?
Waukesha!
Waukesha, Wisconsin. Currently resides in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. His work has been called a special brand of doggerel nonsense and
fufurah.
His performance style has been described like Gallagher, but with poems instead of watermelons. Jim.
Yeah, I'm not going to be too chatty for the sake of efficiency and production, but if you're the kind that wants a product, I'm holding. All right, this is Glossary, Repulse, and Petting Zoo. Most attention spans are actually pigeons. Most poems are wolverines. Wolverines in underpants and freshly showered armpit chicken. Depending on the sense percepted, presupposing that sombrero is a broken toothbrush, once you realize that bricks and breasts and broth are different. Saying lazy morning Z's, each easy tongue and lip smack, grape juice, laughter, soft as toilet paper trees. Casually, denial causes us to think we'd be more clever than we often seem to yawn out fetishistic manifesti. So we orange cone ourselves perpetual, immobile, in an unfamiliar bed, the morning after cigarettes, and the broken ceiling frame, and the rattles, and the wolverines. Patience imperfect. Time frame velvet painting tends to get the Elvis wrong. Rush to squeeze in leg shake motion, slurs reflected light effect to stretch of jumpsuit when you've meant to cheekbone features unobscured by mud flap burn signs. Too much patience once too often, and it's TV killing time. You are a card play dog show Leonardo panting Jesus on his unicorn. Either way, you're breathing traffic fumes all day. You are a sad, sad clown. It's Pug Mill. Here's a newer one. If I could punch it up or Pug Mill down to concrete, you could kiss my asphalt, maybe paddle me some Purdy Wisdom daubed in dog speed, dodging plum pearl either ors. This gravel voice, this husk, this orange rind we ponder. We've puddled out the pulpy bits and squirreled our scurvy, flamed the wood grain smooth to strains of hoofprint hoodwinked zebras, stained our gilded gelding with a sweet lead aftertaste. You paint your pony. You paint your pony feathered macaroni squiggle tone, your loam of Afghan shavings. Once we crack the gray pool surface, it's umbrellas, or it's ugly, or it's rainbows farting unicorns. Second minute hour. Tragedy broke when his stopwatch ran dry. There was a beaten pulse at wrist of second hand, but telegraphic temple throb is telepathic. Situated moments migraine his misguided stature so, his comical detuned nonplussed gnomon into glomenclature. Denatured sage tears rye, denuding always into aftertaste. Gravity blames my hijacked mind frame. Mother blames my freedom spleen. You're not the only apple on the moon. All right, now we'll do some stuff, a couple things that are more concrete. The third rat I killed, the tenth rat I killed was the largest. I assume the oldest, not the smartest. The fifth rat I killed was the smartest. He snatched bait and lit quick three times before tripping catch and springing hammer on the fourth try. The third rat I killed was still alive and panicking when I found him. The bar did not snap neck nor quickly cut essential air or blood flow. The trap had snared him just above what I would call his waist. His upper body fish-like flapping. He was shrieking, dragging the trap along like a broken wheelchair he was belted into.
He was fast.
Yes, but you're kind and generous. All right, two more quick ones. Vestibule. One quick little anecdote. These guys are working in hotels in the overnight shift and .. This is vestibule. You gotta find a windbreak. Layers only get you so far. When that wind picks up, it will cut. And that cut heals. A bus kiosk might do in a pinch. Depends on wind's direction. A well-positioned dumpster and a dead-end alley will suffice. Then again, you'll be dead-ended. You need to keep your eye out for the predatory types. Best bet is an unlocked vestibule. Find yourself an office park. One forgotten lock will earn you four walls plus a roof. And a small space heats up quickly. The only risk in a vestibule is building security. At best, a guard will put you out. At worst, criminal trespass, and you've got problems enough. One Sunday morning, I was waiting out the freezing rain in a vestibule of a half-empty mall off Hungerford in Rockville, Maryland. After about an hour, the guard spots me on his rounds. He unlocks and opens the inner door. I apologize and I assure him I'll be on my way. I want no trouble. He tells me it's all right. I can wait for the rain to stop. Just don't leave a mess. I remember this now, sitting at the front desk of a hotel in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, as I get a radio call from security telling me there's a homeless guy camped in the south vestibule. I radio back, put him out. Capitalism, man. We're stuck in it. All right, we'll finish one surface tension. It's in the moment after waking, fresh from dreaming you, your voice is clearest to me. While my brain stem basics barely function, I hear the song you whisper clearly. My eyes still closed, I half expect to find you next to me. I can feel the surface tension of another on my bed. Reaching for you, I awaken, snoring cat. And now I have to pee. Thank you.
This is the next writer. I haven't seen him in about a year and a half. And his first words to me are, "Dude, what's wrong with your hat?" And I try to take it off. He goes, "Oh, put it back on." Shamble down to the next bar, walk in. Pretty famous area musician goes, "Nice mumpered and sunk hat."
So I'm getting no love today. This next guy, Ari Washington, is a writer, musician, composer and community worker in Cleveland's historic Detroit Shoreway neighborhood. Washington is the author of 26 books, most recently the novel City, and is the director of GTK Press, Ari Washington.
Thank
Kansas City, apparently.
Cheap bastards. Cheap bastards. Fucking scam. I'm gonna read a couple of new things from a book I'm writing right now called The Baldwin Notes. I wrote a novel a long time ago, supposing that Marlon Brando and James Baldwin were lovers, and the family sued me. Huh? Baldwin's. Brando's family didn't find out because they don't know niggas. So these are poems based on his books and kind of blending his life. So if you're not familiar with them, essentially they're gospel poems. Okay, they're not meant to make the white people feel bad. Okay, I'm just expressing my creativity. Frank. His white teeth clanging against white shirt, open his mouth as if to see. Well be, backbeat shuffles and the piano tatters on. Sweaty. Way down the riverside, way down, let the freedom ride. Oh, say, oh my Lord, say. It ain't no dream aside, ain't no mountain on high, without Jesus, oh my Lord, oh, for he saved me, yes he did, for he delivered me, for love is his gift, and I know he watches over, oh, I'ma let you know of my journey, this world is cruel, I'ma wait on that judgment day, and when Jesus comes back, claim me, oh Lord, claim me, yes Lord. The black skin glistens. Fright lets his eyes cast out the congregation in sweet hallelujah. There is nothing that will break him for his voice's majesty. Sunday dusking. Frank must prepare for another week. He irons his only work shirt. So heavy with starch, it stands more erect than he can. He will nod. Say yes, sir. No, sir. Avoid the nightstick and the bottle. For he know the cost. And ain't no one gonna keep him from that Sunday song. Four years ago, I was on one of those like national poetry slam teams. You know, some of y'all may have done this. It's a mistake. It's a horrible ruse. That motherfucker Mark Smith from the Green Mile. I love him to death, but goddamn, that is dumb stuff. And a lot of people go year after year and don't let young people get on the team. I hate that shit. So the old motherfuckers got the way. Let them do that dumb shit.
Amen.
But anyway, we're at the thing, and they're like, you gotta remember your poems. And I was like, I'm not remembering shit. And they're like, why not? Just play for performance. Motherfucker, I'm black. I don't have a transform you?
Yeah.
I transform it, motherfucker. This is my shit. Charlie Moussa, Charlie Moussa. And besides, every time I do a poem off the head, some dumb white lady come up to me talking about, I love your rap.
Oh.
You're going to see my paper, motherfucker. I got this shit.
Yes.
I wrote this shit.
Yes. Yes. Amen.
And then I got all these fours and fives. This one's called Long Patty for Patty Smith.
Yes.
I love Patty Smith.
Yes.
A lot of y'all won't beat Patty Smith, this poem about y'all. Long Patty. I'm going to sing it. Some rely on totem poles and come off alone. Take your nips, forsake them all, and you wanted to be Patty Smith, but too damn scared to be a witch. Go on wishing, go on, get by on your own. The loose curl, false brow, made up to be hit upon. The ghost lips, the thin soul, and you wanted to know them all. Just one look, it could be real, pinned to your maxed pad. You're so far and all gone. You're so you and all wrong. And you wanted to be Patty Smith, but too damn scared. Forsake the witch. Get on. Get by. On your own.
You
got something to clean this, you can do it for real. And drop key, I do it. And all the white guys like, man, motherfuckers dope. And all the black dudes, fuck this motherfucker. Look at this fucker doing that white boy shit. I'm like, dude, it's my shit. It's our shit. It's that white boy shit. Can't win the fucking try. The white boys won't print me. The black dudes won't kick me out the race. Fuck this shit. This is, fuck them. This is Paul Kane. It's my last poem. Because I want to make sure everybody gets time. Not because I'm nice. So don't come up to me talking about some magical Negro shit. Shake my hand and shit. It ain't because I'm nice. But I've been in these thousands of times reading and shit. I ain't got to read all the shit. I got to be the only motherfucker reading. There ain't one book in the library. Kane. If Harlem was full of Nietzsche's, the ghetto would have its own jacket crescent, blue blazer of mock rigor at disdain, the look down of a theory. There are words for this douchebag. Touch himself, calls it tuck. The privilege trap, the non-wit men, housing of roofies, shotgun beers, date rape. This eye was hung out one Sunday morning. The horse that drags me is kind. A dull beast takes lashes for this. A crime of slow tax, the spirit animal. Trees even revolt. They wish for no part in stringing me up. Poplar, smell me. Charred remembrance, Dan Spacey. Shook vows as if we were men. In Nietzsche, the narcissistic jubilation, paint the white of your swollen head. This eye of pushing in these ghettos. Frail gun of wonderment, dual in effigy, my language reworded to knowing you. The young eat the old. We all learn at a pace. Perhaps this is why there is still murder, rape. Perhaps our souls gravitate toward the flaw at first. Is the fool a blank canvas? When I was young, before my balls dropped, before I realized my mother could love other men, before I knew I would become one, I drew pictures for the sheer fun of it, never considering that my tree could not be your tree. There were attempts, cute,
no color within the lines. Thanks.
White pussy, black socks.
Oh, I like that too. Fuck
yeah.
We're a demented bunch here on 39th Street, or the 39 as we call it. William, you ready? Hold on. William Taylor Jr. lives and writes in the Tenderloin neighborhood of San Francisco. His work has been published widely in journals across the globe, including the New York Quarterly, the Chiron Review, and the Catamaran Literary Reader. He is the author of numerous books of poetry and a collection of short fiction. He is a Pushcart Prize nominee and was a recipient of the 2013 Kathy Acker Award. Break the Heart of the Sun is his latest collection of poetry. William.
Thank you so much, everyone. It's really good to be here and see friends and people that I'm meeting here for the first time. Thank you. Called 3 days into the new year. It's January again with the Christmas trees all stripped and abandoned in the gutters and on the sidewalks and all of us mucking about in the 21st century like we have a right. It's the hour between the dog and the wolf when I walk the neighborhood like always. And the horrible men in power go about their wretched business. And us regular slobs, we read the headlines like dark prophecies. And we shrug and get back to our dying. And here in San Francisco, they've torn down every bar that ever had a soul. But I managed to find a dark little place with Roy Orbison on the juke. And the only other man in here is lonely and talks to the girl behind the bar about the colors of the jerseys of the basketball team on the television set. There's not much else to say. We're 3 days into the new year, and there's a momentary lull in bombings, and nightclub shootings, and celebrity deaths. And the guy across the street, standing in front of the Walgreens with a cardboard sign, he's there every day, just like the pigeons, and the old Asian women who pull cans and bottles from the sidewalk garbage bins. And he's a lot like this poem, the way he drifts about with questionable purpose, forgetting exactly what it was he was trying to say. But if you don't keep walking, he's going to tell you anyway. The Day is a Song. The Day is a Song Leonard Cohen didn't have a chance to finish. And I'm caught inside it like a wounded thing. And sometimes my poems leave me like a woman. Or the hours in a day, or the last breath at the end of things. And I'm left with this ghost of a life, and this hunger for beauty in whatever form it can still afford. And outside there's the rain and the broken people beneath, the pretty uselessness that pulls the heart. And sometimes it seems the best plan is just to be forgotten as soon as you can manage. If there's a music to it all, it's kept me going so far. When I finish this beer, I might go outside and find some alley I've never seen. I'll turn the corner and take whatever's there. A proclamation of sorts. Lately, it's been harder and harder to find the words, and in truth, I don't really mind so much. As having something to say eventually becomes as tiring as everything else. And I've reached the point where I'm no longer too proud to proclaim my emptiness. I figure we all have to cop to it eventually. And now more than ever, I just want to dissolve into the pretty sadness of the day, and the perfect gray sky above the lonely apartment buildings, and the glittering shards of rain,
Now the ghosts of the forgotten and the pretty waitress arrives at my table with a beer on the house, and the kindness of her face breaks something within me. And I want to fall into her arms and weep into her breast for everything good and everything lost and everything we have become. And then I figure I should drink my free beer first, just in case it gets weird. Our hearts, the lost cats. The day was going well enough, all things considered. For the time being, care was elsewhere. And the longer you stick around, the more this becomes the best you can hope for. Then an ad on the side of the cat litter box tells me that only 2% of lost cats ever find their way home. And I understood this to be the truth of the world, and that love and all the other pretty things we wear like armor can't erase it. And thinking on it took some of the luster from the day, but I carried on as best I could. With all the lost cats of the world inside me, all hungry and crying in the dark. This is a Timberline. Where I live is like downtown San Francisco, the Timberline, kind of the bad neighborhood. And this is a true story. That's my friend. Called Jonell's, which is a bar in the Tenderloin. They were filming a movie or a TV show or something at Vesuvio, so they wouldn't let us in. And the hipster art show ran out of wine just as we arrived. So we ended up at Jonell's in the Tenderloin at 10 o'clock on a Saturday night, like something from a William Goldman novel. My poet friend had just won $9,000 from a slot machine in Mendocino. He was part of some kind of gang that worked the casino circuit. Whatever they did, I don't think it was completely legal. I didn't understand how it worked, but he sometimes made money at it, and then it took a week or so just to fuck around until the money was gone and he had to figure something else to do. Bonnie the bartender poured our drinks in front of us. My poet friend said, "Bonnie, me and Bill here are the two greatest writers in the whole fucking city, and nobody gives a shit." Bonnie just laughed. She told my poet friend he shouldn't always drink so much. And he said, "Bonnie, I started drinking at 3 o'clock today and I'm feeling pretty vulnerable. This would be the perfect opportunity for you to take advantage of me." Bonnie laughed and changed the channel on the television. My poet friend all of a sudden was cursing and looking at his phone and flipping it off before turning it to his pocket. "My girlfriend," he said. "In an open relationship, she hasn't returned my message in 3 days. I left flowers on her fucking doorstep and everything. Man, I need some blow. Hey, Bonnie, who's got some blow?" Bonnie punched something into her phone, and 2 minutes later, a large bald woman with face tattoos was sitting on the other side of my poet friend. They exchanged some things. My poet friend tells me to watch his beer as he disappears into the bathroom for a good 15 minutes. When he comes back out, he sits back down and gulps down the rest of his beer. He slams the glass on the bar and yells, "Oh, fuck anything that moves!" But nothing moves. So he orders a whiskey neat and another beer. He turns to me and says, "Listen, motherfucker, now you gotta make some poem or something out of this. So make sure you mention that thing about my girlfriend, because that's fucked." In the eye of the fire of everything. It's Easter Sunday as I step over the man asleep on the Tenderloin sidewalk and trudge on through Chinatown where the tourists wait in lines for pastries and pork buns, and luckless creatures hang in butcher shop windows like forgotten martyrs with velvet paintings sold in the alley outside the bar at Stockton and Pine, where country music plays and everybody speaks languages I don't understand. And I just sit and watch the pretty Korean lean across the bar, telling a German woman the names of beers, as her husband smokes cigarettes, looking stupefied in the rain.
And the girl on the jukebox sings, "You can dance in a hurricane only if you're standing in the eye." I don't know what that means, but maybe it's true. And over on Broadway, the hungry eye is open and the women outside beckon with their soft versions of forgiveness. And there's a girl forever leading in the doorway with sad eyes, bad tattoos, and a smile that grants salvation to anyone who can work the ATM. And she drifts about the room, a pretty ghost. And we're caught here together in the eye and the fire of everything, making peace with the horror of things as best we can. Because it's springtime and our hearts and everything are bursting with love and apathy. We have no God, so we bless our own wine and pray to anything that will listen. That's my latest book. Where real music was born. She said, "Baby, I'm as sad as fuck." I said, "Honey, that's just the way some of us are born. It's our gift, our lifestyle. These other folks, they never really learn how to sing."